Hello and welcome. You are with RCR Talk here for another week. Media Matters with Marie and my mate, Marty. Marty. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Busky, good, yes. Yeah, good week. Sun shining.
Yeah,
rain.
I know. I sent you a text the other day. I went to the beach.
Yeah.
It was so hot here the other day, 32 degrees. Yeah.
Doesn't sound like the water was that warm, though.
Oh, it's freaking freezing.
Yes.
Duck's nuts cold. Oh, my gosh.
Froze your tits off, or that was, I think.
I think that's what I put in the text. Yeah, it was just so cold, but it was good. It was invigorating, and it's only the second time this season we've been to the beach because the summer here has been so bad, but there you go. You've been busy, boy. Oh, my gosh. You gave me my laugh out loud moment. Like, I chortled. I chortled to the point Mr. Marie was like, what on earth are you laughing at? Because I had headphones on, so I didn't know what I was laughing at. And it was your daily brief for Monday talking about Helen Patousis Harris and likening her to a teenage girl who wants to write too many vampire novels. Oh, my gosh, so funny. Walk me through. What took you there?
Well, I also described it as an orgy of the lady doth protest too much. Yeah, and as I was listening to her, I was thinking, I mean, are you dumbing it down for Three News? You really don't seem or sound clever enough to have been steering such a major, what turned out to be a major catastrophe in New Zealand's public health. So... Yeah, and I just quoted her directly, you know, and it was really, a lot of huffing and puffing from Helen.
Yeah, and she certainly, I mean, I call her Miss Pants on Fire because she's said some stuff on the record which is blatantly untrue, even when things were published and out being true. Classic case being the a certain injection stays in the injection site, and the Japanese biodistribution study was already out there in the publications. But she, the fact that she's also jumped off X because it got a little hot in that kitchen, and she now does all her whining over on, is it Blue Sky or My Sky or whatever the sky?
Edo Sky.
Well, I don't know. It's where it's the echo chamber where they all go to complain about it, about us. She's like sort of over there now, and there is just no moment, I think, where she even realizes there's no reflection at all that, honey, you might have got it wrong.
Well, also, I mean, we've spoken about her before in this context. She, if you read what she writes, she has got a very strong instinct to authoritarianism. She talks about the need for the right person to be saying the right thing on the right platform, and she scares me a little bit. If you and I did a very said before, it's harder, a lot harder to do 3 minutes than it is to do an hour, because you have to take a ton of coal and hope you can press it into a diamond rather than a little tiny chunk of coal. But there was a lot I left out of that particular bit, and chief among them was speaking about RFK Jr. taking on the Secretary of Health job. I mean, just as significant are Trump's confirmed picks for the National Institute of Health director, Jay Bhattacharya. Authors of the Balfour Declaration.
The Great Barrington Declaration.
The Barrington, I beg your pardon. Fantastic. You know, and if you look at his CV, Stanford University physician, scientist, economist, and professor of medicine, economics, and health research policy. And then you've got Marty Makary, who's been confirmed as FDA commissioner. So they've identified all the different tentacles of the beast, and they're grabbing hold of them. Marty Makary, an eye surgeon at Johns Hopkins University Hospital and the author of three books about healthcare, Unaccountable, about the lack of transparency in hospital care, The Price We Pay, chronicling ballooning healthcare costs, and more recently, Blind Spots, examining instances where modern medicine has ultimately gotten the science wrong. Think the addictive properties of opioids. He's published more than 250 peer-reviewed scientific papers. These really aren't little favor appointments, the people who don't really deserve it, or you know, men in women's clothing, as the last health secretary was. These are serious, serious people. And
also, too, this is the difference between 2016, is that this incoming administration have been working, researching, highlighting, and identifying who were going to be the right people.
Yeah.
To a point. These are not just plucked out of the air. These are considered, planned, executed, and now deployed.
And I think we're going to see, I mean, you know, you see New Zealand's media, Clem, we'll get to a lot of this later on, but clinging to that anti-Trump New York Times, Washington Post, BBC, USAID-funded viewpoints, just clinging to them. And there's astonishing just the clash between the stuff that one sees on X and the stuff that one sees in the mainstream media. I think the most jarring repositioning or reorientation has got to be, it's coming for Māori, I think. You know, you see so much anti-Trump stuff by Māori leaders, and no one ever calls them out and says, hey, have you ever considered why Native Americans disproportionately voted for Trump? Something like 75% of American Indians who voted in that election voted for Trump. They were one of their strongest supporters. And if you look at what Kennedy is saying, the other stuff which really excites me is he's talking about farming practices, how they're looking after the soil, how they're looking after rivers, how they're looking after groundwater, all of that stuff that has just been ignored and been able to be neglected because of fertilizers and pesticides, but time's running out for it. They're starting to get salinification of soil and all that sort of stuff. You'd think Māori would kind of just take a pause and think, well, hang on, a lot of what these guys are talking about is the stuff we want, is stuff that we'd be in support of.
Well, unless you're a tribalist separatist.
Unless you had your snout in the trough.
The trough, exactly. Exactly. No, it is very interesting. And of course, we've talked about the thing. There is going to, sunlight is the best disinfectant. The sun is absolutely blaring now in the United States. They've been doing it in Argentina, these other countries. If you were someone within the public service, you'd be running around like a little rat in the maze right now, absolutely freaking out. I'm going to talk about a few of these things. But first, I just want to jump to something that we're going to do each week because I just think it's quite funny. And also alarming at the same time I've been using the apps more, trying to save a bit of money because it was, you know, costing me about $80 a month in newspapers. So I'm trying to sort of reduce this cost a little.
We don't have a $24 million funding increase like that.
I've had the apps, and so I've been looking at ways to sort of save it. So I'm using the apps a little bit more. And one of the things with this is the snapshots. And one of the things I've now discovered is a little bit like using these apps is, you know, being like a prospector going down to Legacy River to go and pan for some gold, and you've really, really got to look for it. So I thought I would just jump in and we'd have a quick look right now of who's there. I've actually just got the Herald live, and we'll potentially talk about a little bit this, because the one that they've just popped up is Tamihere on the announcement that's come out from the stats and data report, which of course has been scathing about the use of people's data around the Manurewa Marae during COVID and the census campaigns. And much of it is now having to be bounced up outside of the scope of that report, bounced to the Privacy Commission and the police. Now, he's saying here, where's the evidence of Tamahere Defence data use at Marae scrutiny? I know if we jumped over to RNZ, he was saying it's because they're Māori. So he's gone straight there to blame the brownfellas card. What else? Oh, here we go. This one's a good one. 20 adults, 9 children, 2 dogs, 1 cat, homeless family camps at beachsides in Whangarei. Money laundering rule changes could land New Zealand in an undesirable grey list. Oh, here we go. And number four story, number four, because this is so important, breaking news. Meghan's surprise announcement after failed lifestyle brand Meghan Markle has revealed her new move ahead of the release of the Netflix show. Because, Marty, we did all need to know this. I'm intrigued to see whether or not the Duvals are going to pop up in here again. No, it doesn't look like. So those are, oh, and then we do have an opinion piece here of why a nurse left New Zealand for Australia. Good-o. My particular favourite, and I sent it to you because it just confounded me, as I jumped over to Stuff. If anyone out there is like me, and let me know this, is Stuff's new app is freaking bollocks. Such a pain in the ass to use. But I decided to scroll down to the editor's picks. Because this is what Stuff Editor believes that we should be looking at, right?
This is hilarious, isn't it?
Drum roll, please. So there they are. If you want to go and check those out, I screenshotted it and popped it up on my X account, on my X. Number one, AM quiz, morning quiz. There we go. Which Simpsons character is famously left-handed? The second story, people are hysterical over the new White Lotus theme music. Which season did it best? Third, the lessons life teaches us that school will not. What a drawful play headline. Checker, as in Michael Checker, firmly in the frame to return as Wallabies coach. So not even an All Blacks story. So gutless, JJ Feeney on why she took on the trolls and she doesn't date New Zealand men. See, Marty, you needed to know that. And lastly, $1 reserve on this land just minutes from Auckland CBD. This is the editor's picks on Stuff, and they wonder why they had problems. And lastly, let's jump over to Nanny State. And Nanny State, actually, to be fair, wasn't too bad. I've actually got the Manurewa Marae story up, which was very good. And yes, over here we have under, oh, let's get politics news. Let's go top news. There we go. Top news from Nanny State. Number one, you ready?
Come on.
The parents bringing back landlines for their kids. I shit you not. Number two, it's easy to throw stones. Waipareta Trust targeted for being Māori, CEO says. Oh, I don't think that's the reason, John, just quietly. So wrong, drunk driver gets home detention for a crash that killed a fashion designer. Auckland's trash is another town's treasure. Sir Ian Taylor asks, do you really need your pension? And lastly, super widespread misunderstanding catches out landlords. And lastly, actually a huge honour, co-supreme award at the Halbergs, which I was actually quite happy about.
Is super widespread, what is it? Super widespread.
Super widespread is the, in quotes, super widespread misunderstanding catches out landlords.
Could super widespread misunderstanding be the rebranding name for misinformation, do you think? Is it the next one?
I get to look at that. Wow. Anyway, so there right. You go. That gives you the little snapshot of what is there. But you do have to pan for some gold. And in terms of panning for gold, jumping back to the Herald, Bruce Cottrell is often our saviour. And you highlighted him for me this week. His opinion piece on a Saturday's Herald, time for decisive government action to get New Zealand back on track. What stood out for you here, mate? Because there's an absolute plethora of stuff that's going to hit us off, I think, for the rest of the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, what stood out was it was nice that we could return the favour. It was essentially, a lot of it was a compilation of our various talking points on media matters, I thought. But it was a very strong column. He set the scene, as we said, farewell to what was arguably the worst government in our history. a sense of hope emerged, despite the woeful stage of an economy riddled with debt and society overladen with crime. We believed that we would scramble from our COVID-enforced hibernation and begin a recovery. With that hope came anticipation that the policies of the recent past, which led to the degradation of our health system, the silliness of what was being taught in our schools, the race-based policies of Three Waters and co-governance, racist recruitment policies, kowtowing to climate alarmism, and the World Economic Forum agenda would soon be things of the past. He said it out loud.
He said it out loud. The World Economic Forum, which, of course, the previous government spent a lot of time pretending didn't exist.
Because they're both young global leaders for it. And yeah, they've kind of gone, well, Jacinda Ardern has gone very much back to that mission by going to Harvard and working where they have a confluence of interests of the blob, the pharmaceutical industry, and corporate media.
He also says here, to be fair, they inherited a hell of a mess from the state of our foreign affairs relationships. I mean, just look at the Cook Islands, to our debt-laden and sometimes incompetent local authorities, where there are shambles. The performance within our once competent government departments has been decimated. The bureaucracy, full-time equivalent employees in the public service, has grown by 34% to 63,000 people, while the associated salary bill increased 72% to $6.1 billion. Wow, that's a lot of pay rises, Marty. Despite the massive growth in employee standards delivered by the service has worsened. And hasn't Sir Brian Rush got a lot on his plate to look at sorting that out? And he, you know, sent a warning across the bow yesterday around that. So Cottrell is laying out a picture of what is going on, the absolute poo that this coalition has inherited.
Yeah, the double whammy of not only not having all that borrowed money to lard on your mates, but having to pay back the money that's long since been spent on fishing boats and batches on the Kapiti Coast and wherever else these various in-crowds spend their money. But the other thing he said, which we've said a lot, was he contrasted what's happening here with what's happening in America and what's happening in Argentina. Talking about Trump's executive orders and just how he's just been firing them out. Those executive orders are changing the way America does politics and business. The US has debt and interest cost problems that dwarf our own, but they're cutting expenditure. They're getting out of unproven and troublesome global initiatives, clamping down on aid and fraud and taking back control from interest groups and politicians alike. You might not like Trump, but he was elected on a change agenda and he's doing the things he said he would do in a hurry. Argentine economist Javier Milei became the country's president around the same time as our current government was sworn in. Since then, he's eliminated 28% of government spending and reduced the number of ministries by half. He's achieved the first budget surplus in 16 years and reduced monthly, yes, monthly inflation from 25% to 2.4%. And despite the tough decisions, he, like Trump, is maintaining and building his popularity because the people like seeing action.
Yeah, and also in here, and you brought it up before we got started, political theatre is a funny thing. As a gaggle of our MPs journey to the widened upper to stand on the side of the road for a rather pathetic photo opportunity with the new speed limit signs, the new US President Donald Trump was stationed in front of a live TV audience, signing a pile of executive orders live on TV and flicking the pens into the crowd. Now, you and I have mentioned this before. I mean, you often call Christopher Luxon David Brent of New Zealand politics, and part of that is he does not know how to play the optics game, which is fine. But what you do need to have is a social media team and a comms team that does know how to play the optics game. And you've got a lot of thoughts on that because, quite squarely, they don't.
Yeah, I mean, it was a thought that started gnawing at me actually this morning when I was putting this together. And especially as in the last weeks, those polls have started to show that the more government and less freedom side of politics have enough to form what would be one of the most horrifying governments New Zealand's ever seen. Te Pāti Māori in its present state. You know, if people haven't caught your excellent interview with our friend from America.
Oh, Trevor Loudon.
Yeah. If people haven't, so shall we leave the silence there so we can edit out that? If people haven't caught your interview with Trevor Loudon talking about Anthony Albanese's Marxist background and is dismissing of Te Pāti Māori as openly Marxist and the Greens as openly Maoist.
Maoist, yeah. I think he said, yeah.
The idea of those guys getting back into Gisborne is, getting back into
government.
back into government is just terrifying.
Yeah, well, it's a bit Freudian, really, when you think about Gisborne, because the population there is heavily Māori based, and there's a lot of division there amongst Māori between those that are seeing that victimhood actually pays. Pays exceptionally well, and those who have always lived a traditional life, who understand the value of personal tino rangatiratanga as opposed to the tino rangatiratanga that is gifted to you by the tribal elites in the state.
Yeah.
Very distinct difference.
Yeah, no, it really is. And one of the things I most liked about working, writing stories for EIT down there was talking to all these people who were the first person in their family to get a qualification and move off working in the fields for minimum wage. And it's such a transformative thing. It's easy for these effete people in Wellington or well-educated tribal leaders to brush off the power of education and the need for economic development that allows people the opportunity to not be always worried about money and to start looking to more distant horizons than what am I going to feed the dog. It's amazing the power of $35 an hour to transform a whole family.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that, and Cotswold touched on it with so many different points in that article, and looking at those different points, that it actually sort of filters out to so many stories that we have seen this week. So I interviewed yesterday Simon Anderson, and we talked about what had been going on in regards to the Tāmaki story and the wider milieu there. So we won't talk about that here today. Catch the
I do enjoy Simon Anderson on X.
Yeah, he's awesome.
That's a little provocateur.
Oh, yeah. And so Simon and I had a great conversation. But I look at all the, taking your zoom out approach at different things and looking at this cultural article, the sunlight that has now been blasted and shone on governance within the United States now is now also shining here in this country, the sort of squid-like tentacles that
cockroaches scuttling around on the kitchen floor when you turn the light on.
Exactly. And so we're starting to see these cultural elements starting to happen. And the whole protests at the weekend between Tāmaki and the Pride, is, I think that is part of that. There's also too, Shane Jones did this announcement around taking on the ESG targets and discrimination that a lot of our banks are now having for businesses. So not actually looking at lending on the basis of financial capability, but actually looking at it through an ESG lens, which is very much an American import. And Matua Shane is saying, not having any more of that. Cottrell called out the DEI and also the WEF. Well, those sorts of things, Christopher Luxon is clinging on to them because he quite likes them and climate, and because, you know, he's corporate and he's been indoctrinated with all of this at Procter & Gamble or wherever in hell he worked. I can't remember. Unilever, I think, wasn't it? Anyway, I digress.
Yeah,
so you're sort of entrenched with that, but those tentacles are now starting to slip, and people are aware of it now.
Well, it's instructive to look at who's really squealing about this, especially when you look at what it's turning up. And I mean, in the Sunday Star Times, there was a Washington Post article saying, well, the problem is that DOGE isn't actually finding any corruption. It's like, what? There's something like, what, 400 people in the States who are over 150 years old because they're still getting paid Social Security?
I know. That's absolute insanity. Billions of, was it over $6 billion being paid out in benefits to dead people?
The Ukraine
with voting rights?
Ukrainians are saying, well, we haven't got two-thirds of the aid or whatever that you're saying you sent us. And you know, there's 30% of Ukrainian farmlands already been sold to Monsanto and
DuPont.
Cargill.
And DuPont, yeah.
And DuPont.
Who were all owned by?
BlackRock.
BlackRock.
And who's Christopher Luxon cozying up to, both for investment into New Zealand and I suspect his next job. I think he's really excited about what he can do now he's got Prime Minister on his CV. He can really get one of those big boys' jobs. And he smells the precious and he wants it. Mm. But yeah, so there's a limit to how much moralizing I'll take from BlackRock about that, given the things that they do that are just transparently evil. And the other thing is, BlackRock's not exactly big on diversity themselves. If you look at the ethnic origin of most of the people who own and manage BlackRock, they're not diverse.
No.
They like wearing little hats.
This is the beautiful thing about what is going on now. Because, of course, I mean, I've been steeped in this culture war stuff since 2018. What is hopeful for me is what I saw and experienced firsthand. So I had it, you know, cancellation and doxing and threats and you name it. I got it all back in the day. You know, such a nostalgic time now. What I see now, we have moved tremendously forward in that time. So that's good news. For a lot of people, that was invisible. It was this invisible cloak of horizontal policing and quiet fear that people couldn't exactly put their finger on. That doesn't exist anymore now. I mean, even in the protest situation with the Tamaki's, I was appalled at one of the stories that appeared around trying to cancel a new EFM, Bailey Palanga, I think it was, who is a member who was there, was there in support of the Man Up team. He happens to work for a radio station, and here's the Herald showing a photograph of him and doxing this guy, highlighting him and putting pressure on his employment just simply because he happened to be there. I mean, imagine if we applied that lens to those that appeared at Albert Park.
Well, imagine, you know, why they didn't apply that lens.
Well, of course. But see, the thing now is, 5 years ago, everyday Kiwis would have looked at that and not thought twice about it. Whereas today, I think everyday Kiwis are looking at that going, why are you doing that to that guy?
How come all the people involved in your movement are just so unappealing, unattractive, and seemingly just deeply troubled?
Look,
you're not healthy seeming individuals.
Marty, don't talk about the Green Party like that. That's not fair. Anyway.
But yeah, on that, you know, Shane Jones, I don't know if you caught that. I said I was going to send you a link and didn't. But
that's right.
The editorial on Friday last week, it's on the 14th. This conflation of interfering in business and stopping an agenda that's being imposed on us by this giant financial organization. Woke or not, political meddling in business decision-making sets a dangerous precedent. It is jarring to hear a government that claims to be pro-business berating banks for the strategic decisions they make about lending. New Zealand First Deputy Leader and Resources Minister Shane Jones is up in arms about so-called woke bank plans to move away from the fossil fuel industry. They're defending debanking. And if you really get down to debanking, it is pernicious.
Oh,
it is a way for government, and there was a very much during the Biden administration, it was used as a tool by the Biden administration to, and Trudeau's, to destroy their enemies or critics.
Oh, and the Brits as well.
So you got New Zealand Herald's editorial clutching their pearls and defending that. Very telling.
That whole move in terms of control, you mentioned it before, you know, with Helen Patousis-Harris, that sort of little inner authoritarian that has, you know, not keen to bust out, it has busted out, you know, that is deep there. The police watchdog, and this is what I was talking to Simon about yesterday, the police watchdog, which is the IPCA, they had their ruling over the police actions at Albert Park. And I mean, it was pretty much a whitewash. And it was the system, not the people. But the Post, and I have to give absolute ups to the Post. Tom Hunt did a story Tuesday, police watchdog calls for protest restrictions. And I want to bring it up again because he went to the New Zealand Council for Civil Liberties. And the chair there is Thomas Beagle. And it was totally opposed to the idea mooted on Tuesday by the Independent Police Conduct Authority in a new review into policing the public protests in New Zealand. It seems very odd that the police watchdog would wade into this area, which has such significant ramifications for everyone's political rights in Aotearoa New Zealand, Beagle said. Has the IPCA got confused into believing that the PC in their name is for public conduct rather than police conduct? Bravo.
And isn't it jarring how surprising it is to get an opposing view in a newspaper story?
As I said to you, it's like panning for gold.
Yeah, the fact that that warrants comment and praise at this juncture is just appalling.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but it is good to actually see that's out there in the record, which is great. And also, too, the fact that people are highlighting. So what they're wanting to do essentially in that report is now apply parameters to protests. So essentially creating a bureaucratic infrastructure around how a protest should act, look, be, and happen, which then means that if you do that, you can control what becomes good protest and bad protest, which kind of takes out the entire point of protest, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we, on the Fourth Estate last week, we touched on some of those organizations that were founded, the Triple M group that was founded to control what counts as news. And the stick is it connects to a global organization that pinches advertising off from people who don't do what they're told. So it's just another tentacle from that DEI BlackRock octopus. And now we've got the safer online services and media platforms that are looking at bringing organizations like Reality Check Radio into that regulatory framework. And, you know, I don't think we've got too much to worry about, but that's really if you've done nothing, you've got nothing to fear kind of defense of totalitarianism, isn't it? It's coming at us from all angles, but at the moment we're in an interesting time when you can look at who's really, really losing the plot as some of this long overdue stuff happens.
Well, they're losing the plot too because that sunshine is shining. That is disinfecting things, I think, in the Northern Hemisphere.
Cutting off income.
Yeah, and they're wanting to get as much push through as they possibly can because, as we know, we take forever to catch up with everybody else. So they're wanting to get stuff through. What you mentioned before, there's that discussion document, I've just got it sitting here, from Media Reform, which is from the VSA, and they've got five draft proposals. Ensuring accessibility of local media platforms, requiring TV manufacturers to ensure local media services are prominent and visible on devices such as smart TVs so they can be easily found by by audiences, because audiences obviously don't have the capability of finding stuff themselves because they must be dumb, according to them. Increasing investment into the discoverability of local content requires streaming platforms and TV broadcasters to invest in local content and implement measures to ensure it's more discoverable on their platforms, supporting the production and engagement of New Zealand stories. Oh, is this what happens when the public interest journalism fund gets taken away? When the safety blanket gets taken away from Boo Boo?
It's still there in terms of its rules, isn't it? And it's still there till, I think, whether it's this year or
26, I think.
Yeah, if one of the organisations breaks one of those rules and dares to suggest that Māori did in fact cede sovereignty, as was agreed at the Kohimarama conference in 1860 unanimously by chiefs and subsequently by Apirana Ngata, they deviate from the messaging that New Zealand is a systemically racist country that disadvantages Māori, then they have to pay back their funding.
Mm.
So that explains the Jenny May phenomena.
It does. And here's now I'm just going to go through all of these and you pick out which one is called the bury the lead of the five. So we've got the first two. Number three is increasing captioning and audio description, requiring more captioning and audio description on content that is broadcast or streamed to ensure access for disabled New Zealanders. Oh gosh, is teletext still a thing? That used to be around back in the day, remember? You were really flash at your house if you had teletext on your TV. Anyway,
we didn't have teletext.
No, we didn't either. Number four, modernising professional media regulation. Revise the broadcasting standards regime, including the Broadcasting Standards Authority, with platform-neutral and system-level regulation of professional media. And number five, streamlining Crown content funders. Consolidate New Zealand On Air and the Film Commission into a single entity. About time. Supporting efficient administration of government funding for local content and industry development. Which one of those is the one that they buried the lead on?
I don't know.
It's definitely number four, which is modernising professional media regulation. So that one. So all the other four are piffles. I mean, obvious piffle. That one is the one they buried it at number four, draft proposal number four. Revise the broadcasting standards regime with the platform neutral and system level regulation of professional media. And the thing there is professional media, what constitutes professional media, because up until now, and I think David said it in your fourth estate, when you were discussing these other elements, is what constitutes what goes out. And it's because they have to have a frequency, there has to be that scheduling. So, of course, it covers all that traditional legacy media. All of us here in the world of the interweb, of course, haven't got that regulatory capture. This is what they're after. They've tried it two other ways. It's been pushed back from a free speech element. So they're now going for it here with the BSA, because ultimately, at the end of the day, they want to control what people hear.
Do you think that it's they're trying to get a similar situation to the supermarkets? They just want to make barriers to entry that are such that you only get people who are in the big club at the table?
Yes, I think there's an element to that. And continuing your supermarket analogy, I think they also want to control the flow of information. It's like when you walk into the supermarket and the first thing that you hit often is the aisle of value or whatever the promotions are that they want you to actually purchase, buy or what have you, because that suits them to do it. And that what you've actually really gone in for is buried somewhere that you have to dig out and hunt out and find.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's... there was a lot of opportunity for National to roll a lot of the stuff back, and they really haven't done it. And
why do you think that is, Marty?
Well, as I said, I think it's in no small part because the primary loyalty of Christopher Luxon is to his next job, and so he won't do anything that is going to put him in as a persona non grata to the Larry Fink brigade. He wants to be welcomed in as a conquering hero. I think the National Party board are a big part of the problem. You know, and New Zealanders have to take a look at themselves and wonder whether they've ignored Plato's valuable advice that those who consider themselves aloof from politics are destined to be ruled by their inferiors. And I think, yeah, there's just a timidity about nationalists. It's been a criticism of them for decades. But they don't make brave changes. They're, you know, and New Zealand's problem is that we've, as I said last week, we've elected a steady as she goes government in a hold on to your hats time.
So speaking of bravery, Cook Islands. What's been going on there with Mark Brown heading over and signing a agreement, and what how did, was it termed, a cooperate agreement of agreement of cooperation or something along those lines?
Yeah, I didn't read the agreement. I did read Richard Preble's excellent column.
So what was Preble's thoughts on it?
Well, Preble is very linked into the islands. I think he's married to a Polynesian woman. I think Fijian. I'm not 100%. But his thing was very much, look, diplomacy in the Pacific is all about relationships. Winston Peters does it excellently. He found it hard to believe that Winston Peters didn't know about that, but he writes, I was in the Cook Islands prior to Christmas at a charity event. I chatted with Prime Minister Mark Brown. I asked him why the Cooks wanted its own passport. He explained that there is a restriction on how many New Zealand rugby players can play for a European club team, but no cap on the number of Pacific Island players. He believes with their own passport, Cook Islanders could play professional rugby in Europe. Very Pacific, nothing about being independent. In my view, Foreign Affairs is more concerned about the views of organizations such as Greenpeace than representing the best interests of the Cook Islands. China has gained influence in the Cook Islands because the Chinese provide the assistance the islands want. We provide the assistance we say they need. I think that wraps it up pretty well. And I was very worried. Well, Debbie Ngarewa Packer's trip over there, meeting with tribal leaders and saying, well, why should they have to consult with New Zealand? It's a bit of diplomatic sense bordering on treason, going overseas and fomenting division and departure from...
But an interview, she claims that she didn't know any of this was going on. Now, either that has been overly obtuse, or it just shows you how completely disconnected to the political process she is.
It hit me like a ton of bricks watching a parliamentary debate. She's just not very bright. She's not the sharpest tool in the fore, is old Debbie. Not very agile intellectually. So yeah, she just has to get by with a grab bag of identity politics remarks and blame.
The thing with the Cook Islands, and I think the wider issue, see, Peters has been all over this for a long time. Remember the $1 billion for the Pacific, and he got really lambasted about that at the time. And he was seeing the Chinese, the Belt and Road Initiative, that was going into all islands, including the Cook Islands. They had a justice building built and the like. And there's a lot of investment that has gone on into the Cook Islands. Mark Brown, I just wonder, you know, I mean, everybody knows everybody over there. I've spent a lot of time over there, both professionally and recreationally. And Mark Brown, I know, was pretty upset during the COVID measures. He worked very hard to get pretty much everyone on that Roko Rarotonga vaccinated, because it was killing them. The closing of the borders was absolutely killing them.
And
so
they're delightful people, the Cook Islanders. They're like, give you an insight into what Maori would be like if they weren't constantly being told that everything bad that happens to them is someone else's fault. Just got that sunny optimism and enterprise.
Yeah, so they were COVID-free at the time we were COVID-free. And he got everybody, he said to Ardern, we're ready. I mean, it all turns out that the science was shocking and it wouldn't have worked, but regardless, he's like, we're ready, we're open for business, open the border We're New, you know, we've got New Zealand passports, open the border between the Cook Islands and New Zealand so we can have free travel between the two. That would then help their economy, help their people to move between the two places, help Cook Islanders either get work in New Zealand or bring New Zealanders up to the Cook Islands to help sort of limp the economy along. All of these things, and Ardern was nope, and she refused to do it. Now, that would have stung. That would have stung. And I also, I wonder whether part of this agreement of cooperation with the Chinese is a little bit of a middle finger to the New Zealand government saying, well, you didn't help us then, so we're going to the people that have helped us 10, 15 years previously and built some lovely new buildings and done all of these things and are not going to shut the door on our faces.
Yeah, quite possibly. You mentioned what it was like if you had a tourism business with employees who over years you'd trained to be really sharp. And I mean, I've done some of the tours over there. As I said, you know, they're just such beautiful people. They're really warm and they run just really great, smooth, enjoyable tourism operations. You get to the point as one of those operators where you can't pay these people who are really good and make the whole thing a memorable experience and they have to go away or do something else or, you know, they have finding it difficult to buy food. Yeah, that the level of remoteness from the reality of people's lives during that time was just appalling. And it's still what annoys me. Just the idea, oh, you can just shut a business down for 6 months.
And places, and unlike here, they don't have a social welfare system in the Cook Islands. So, you know, there wasn't sugar money that had been rolled out to everybody.
If you're a business owner here, there wasn't a lot of sugar money either. If you're a worker, there was because...
Yeah, but there was none of that. So, and again, Peters, as I know, going, I think he's going over to try and redevelop that relationship. Whether he did or didn't know about it, I don't know. I know that there are being protests over there at the moment. As you mentioned, Debbie Ngāriwa Packer is there. What worries me is that her form of critical race theory type division is not healthy for somewhere like the Cook Islands. Get out of there, Debbie. They don't just, you know, I know you say you're on holiday. Why are you on holiday when the house is sitting? You've just had, 10, 11 weeks of freaking holiday. Why are you there now? I don't care if it's your anniversary. Have your anniversary early, darling. Do what normal people do and actually take their holidays when, you know, you're scheduled, you know. Anywho. Promise not to get ranty. We wanted a nice show today. I get grumpy, Marty. What else did you have on your list? Save me from my grumpy self.
Oh. I mean, it's as you say, you've got a really pan for the old gold. I mean, just a few things. There was Liam Dan's article on younger Kiwis leading New Zealand exodus, new stats reveal. I mean, we're bleeding bright young people. That's a problem. I thought it was very interesting. Zero Hedge had a post, DC internet searches for criminal defense lawyer and RICO law erupt as Doge drains swamp. There was a whole lot of different search names that have just up by 400, you know, how to offshore money, how to bleach a computer after the Trump won. Those searches for that went right up. When you read the stuff or when you sent the stuff headlines out, interestingly, I bumped into something on Facebook, which was about a Norwegian philosopher, Peter Wessel Zapfe, whose theory was that humans are born with an overdeveloped consciousness which does not fit into nature's design. And so he wrote this in 1933. So we look for either isolation, which is a fully arbitrary dismissal from consciousness of all disturbing and destructive thought and feeling, anchoring, which is the fixation of points within or construction of walls around, which provides individuals with a value or an ideal to consistently focus their attention on. I guess that's sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
God, the church, state, morality, fate, laws of life, the people are all examples of collective primary anchoring firmaments. Distraction, this is when one limits attention to the critical bounds by constantly enthralling it in impressions. Distraction focuses all one's energy on a task or idea to prevent the mind from turning on itself. The other one was sublimation. This is where you basically transform your angst into art. So it's interesting to think about the way the news, the human discontentment in those terms. And when you sent me that list of stuff headlines, I thought, well, there's pretty much one of each of those in there, yeah. Isn't there? A bit of sport, yeah. Bit of, yeah. And it's a real call to evolution, isn't it, at the moment? Because as I said, you're seeing some people just go absolutely crazy and just thinking, whoa, that's disproportionate.
And, well, it's also where the evolution is at, because of course the postmodernist overlay into this new Marxist sort of level critical theory is that there is that complete fluidity, there is no boundary, there is no roles, there is none of these things. But as you and I were talking about before we got started, there is something base and instinctual about our roles as men and women, as parents, as protectors, as providers, as nurturers. And that is right at the core of who we are. And you can pretend and play act as much as you like, but those base instincts are very, very difficult to breed out. And, of course, the postmodernists would like to think that could all
work. Yeah, I think we're machines.
Yeah.
I think one of the most disgusting things recently was how when Luxon started to get crap about the Paris Accord, billions that we owe, on paper at least, he pivoted to bash beneficiaries. And I think a lot of New Zealanders at that point, he thought, oh, well, I'll just dog whistle, create a bit of division. I think for a lot of New Zealanders, they were looking at what a small proportion of jobs there were available to such a large proportion of a large number of unemployed people. Again, it's just his tenure. Mm. You know, everyone deserves a mission, as you say. And so I think what we have to do as a nation to work out how we're going to approach a lot of this stuff is really to confront our shadow, the terrible time that so many kids have here, and what a terrible waste of human potential our ineffective education system is, and our high unemployment rates, and you know all the money that we're sending overseas and these various little bits of wealth redistribution dressed up as environmentalism. And I hope once they're through gradually finding out that they can't fight the Trump phenomena, that light, once the light switched on, the darkness doesn't leave the room slowly. It's going to be interesting to see whether they can pivot. Yeah. And there's a lot of incentive on them not to pivot, because it's like a thing that's got its own momentum. You know, they've been set up to do what they're told by Larry Fink and his mates. And when I say Larry Fink, ultimately I'm talking about the people who print the money. They own the private equity firms, that own the corporations, that do the advertising, that control the media, that threaten government if they do things that don't suit them, that can turn liquidity on and off and make a government look good or make it look bad, make the currency scream. I'm just trying to think who said that. I think it was... who was that statesman in America who said power is the ultimate aphrodisiac?
No, gone. Sorry, too early in the morning for that for me.
Used to date. Anyway, we're gonna have to clip that out.
Hey, the other thing with all of that is the things that, you know, again, they're not talking about. And what I would like to see is the coalition government returning to what the names say on the tin. National. New Zealand first. They probably of the three are the ones that are doing what it says on the tin. And act.
Well, they are acting.
And they are, yeah.
Doing the little drive the Land Rover up the Parliament stairs act.
Yeah. So
turn up and dress in pink act.
Indeed. Hey, we have some feedback. So great. Thank you, everybody, that sent in feedback. 2057 is the text, inbox at realitycheck.radio. From the text machine, enjoyed Trevor Loudon recently. And yeah, I mean, you referenced Trevor earlier.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, it was, as I said, when we, this is the, I have to say, this is the nice thing about this new format. I'm not having clock watch like I used to. As Marty will tell you, there was a lot of clock watching that used to go on. I don't have to do that now. When I do interviews like the one with Trevor, that just was just gold the whole time. And I realized as it went on, and we, I mean, the whole reason that we were getting together primarily was to talk about his book, but I can't get Trevor in and not talk about what was happening post inauguration. And then before we knew it, we were an hour and a half deep, and it was like, crikey, I'm going to have to split this up into two separate interviews, which is what we did. And it's great not to be able to do that and not have to edit stuff out, which is what we would have had to have done before.
Well, I mean, it
It's
could have stood another hour as well.
oh, easy, easy. It
Yeah.
was just absolutely fantastic. So those are both up. We talked about the current situation post inauguration as it was as stood, and the confirmation hearings as they were progressing, and vision moving forward with the Trump administration. And then the second interview was on his book, Comrade Prime Minister, which I had just finished actually the other day, which is the most astounding read about Anthony Albanese. And often too, we look at Comrade Jacinda as we know where her roots are, and then Justin Trudeau, but we actually, I think, forget how steeped in this Marxist ideology Anthony Albanese is. And it was utterly astounding. He actually is from that perspective is vastly more dangerous, I think, than Ardern. And
Yeah.
the book is a must read. If you're in Australia and you go vote, I would be reading that. Anyway, Marie and Marty, great to have you guys back, but please turn up the volume. Oh, okay. I don't know what the turn up the volume means, but we can't turn up the volume here, but it might have been my mic was a bit extra quiet, so I have actually turned that
Maybe
up
in
this week.
production.
Yeah.
Might just mean that when you have to turn up the volume to play it.
Ah, true, true. Marie and Trevor, big thumbs up from Kingsley. Thanks, Kingsley. Oh, helps if I, there we go. From Jackie, please can someone tell that guy something the same day RFK Jr. gets in? Maybe it'll sign, fingers crossed. From Jackie, that was, she's talking about Mike Hoskins, and he did a sort of a mark the week with fluoride being the stupidest debate of the week. You know, I do listen. I do check in with the Hosk, particularly on a Tuesday when he has Christopher Luxon on. He often gets stuff so right, and then he's one of these ones. He's a bit like, you know, another breakfast broadcaster that gets things so incredibly, incredibly wrong.
Jeffrey reminds me of Grandpa Simpson as a young man. You know that sometimes in
Yeah.
Simpsons they flash back to him being a young man.
Yeah.
He's
So.
a young Grandpa Simpson.
The fluoride, in terms of the fluoride, 360 tonight, that's going to drop tonight, is on the fluoride debate. If you want to know, if you're on the fence on this, you're not really certain about it, you haven't kept up to date with things, check out that episode, drops tonight, 8 o'clock. Fourth Estate, oh, for Fourth Estate, Marty, this is all for you. From Athena, hi there. I just finished listening to the conversation and heard David Harvey speak about the legal profession. He speaks about them being uninterested. And after reading this article from Ursula Edgington, PhD, titled New Zealand's Crown Law Merry-Go-Round of Legal Fees, it explains it quite clearly. Sadly, the legal profession, like the medical profession, has been hijacked. And there has been a link sent on that. And if you want that link, you can flick Liz a email at inbox@realitycheck.radio, or actually she may even pop this that link in the
Probably pop it in the show notes.
show notes. Yeah. And yeah, you're right, Athena. The legal profession, the medical profession, they have certainly been hijacked by the critical theory disease, and it's going to take a while for that one to filter out, and particularly the legal profession, because their version of critical theoryitis is also heavily laced with good dollops of critical race theory, and it's going to take a while to for that to be brushed out. Hi, I'm listening to the Fourth Estate, and I would like Rachel to know that Trump has a med bed, which is why he's in good form at 78 years. Bring on the med beds. And also too, I think with Donald Trump as well, he's a complete teetotaler, which I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize. He doesn't drink at all and hasn't done for a very, very long time, or ever, actually.
Ever really, yeah.
Yeah.
His brother was an acute alcoholic, and
Yeah,
Or
so
died young.
I definitely know that that's part of it. From Adrian, game changer, showing the spineless it's time to stand up. Well done, Muddy. And finally, from our friend Mike. You'll be pleased to know, Mike, before we got started recording today, Marty and I were starting to hatch our plan. Yes, there we go, Mike. There's the hat, just for you. And hatching the plan, Mike, for the Rhoda. We're coming. We're coming for you, Mike. We're coming. Marty, I've just watched your very well done for the state. And yes, I must say, well done. I do have a small groat, but nothing huge. None of you have any RCR gear on. It's a bit slack, but no big deal. So that's just for you, Mike. I've got an RCR hat that fits me, which looks a bit weird, and my hoodie has it on the back. So for you, Mike, oh, there, and oh, there we go.
No.
I always enjoy listening to your insights and really do enjoy Rachel Stewart's observations and down-to-earth ideas. You, Marie, and probably Rachel should be in Parliament running the country with all the staff from VFF and RCR. It could be the Marty and Rachel party, shortly. No, as for me, that's a hard no, Mike. I sent a note to Marie
Diplomatic
this.
incidents right from the get-go.
Yep. And he sent us a note about the potluck in Foxton. So we are working on that. And we're really looking forward to that, Mike. We're going to definitely make it happen. And I did actually say to the team that we need the M&Ms need to do a Rhoda. And I think it was the lovely Liz. Yes, the lovely Liz said, will it look like this? Which, for those who are just listening at audio, it's a picture of the two M&Ms, the candies, in a
I didn't
car.
even get that.
Yeah, the two M&Ms, the candies, heading in a car, for heading down on a road trip. So yeah, we have been talking about that. We thought we might do that. That's a really fun winter thing to do, we thought. So we'll work out the logistics and might head into the Central Island and do some visiting. So I think that would be fun. Well, Marty, this has been great. And remember, if you've got any feedback, 2057 is the text, and inbox at realitycheck.radio is the email. We're going to do the feedback for anything in my show, Fourth Estate and Media Matters, all here at the end of Media Matters. So if you're looking for that feedback, this is where to find it. And we do love getting it. And just, yeah, if you've got anything you want us to talk about or anything at all, do
What
drop
is
us a line.
your, because we're taking turns to do those little 3 minute segments in the Daily
Yes.
Brief. And if you haven't caught the Daily Briefs yet, they're just such a nice
So
little,
good.
such a good way to stay in touch with what's coming up on RCR and also with the news. It's a really refreshingly balanced, well done bit of news. My 3 minute bit is on Monday. When's yours? Have you got a definite day yet?
No, I haven't committed to a definite day because of all the other juggling that I'm doing with 360 and counterculture and everything else. But every now and then, when I have an idea coalesce, which has been today, I will put pen to paper, as it were, and bang out some thoughts. And I have got a few thoughts floating around the noggin at the moment.
Well,
So watch out. There could be a man. I could be
as
turning up.
Rudolf Steiner said, Marie, enthusiasm does much, but duty does more. So that is a good thing about having to do it. It does kind of end up popping out.
And has everybody noticed now that Marty works very well to a deadline?
Pressure makes diamonds, Busky.
Pressure does make diamonds. Hey, we'll do it all again next week. Thank you very much for joining us. This has been Media Matters here on RCR Talk. Thanks, Marty.
Thanks very much, Marie. Have a good week, everyone.